Now we're illegal on the other meeting.
So the rest of this agenda is going to happen after?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You'll have to hang.
Oh, yeah, you'll have to hang.
Yeah. But we just have one. We just have one public hearing. Yeah, you can't leave, Harvey. Seriously. There's a legal thing that you have to start within half an hour. Believe me. Yeah. Harvey, could you open the meeting just so that we're not? Could you open the meeting officially so that we don't? Two in opposition. Okay.
It's the second.
No, it's the public hearing. It's something that's hard. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's a rezoning. Okay, Harvey? You need to open the meeting now, Harvey. I'm not joking. It's the law. Nobody cares.
You got 45 seconds. Plenty of time. You're just so high strung. 45 seconds is tons of time. See? Done.
We could, Harvey, you know what we could do? Because we could call the meeting to order and then we could take a 2-minute break if you need one. Okay. Just saying.
We could call the meeting to order and then take a 2-minute break.
So if you needed a break or something before we start the hearing, I'm just saying you do that if you want. I'm leaving it up to you. I just, we have to start the meeting.
We started.
And we started it. Harvey, do you want to take like a bathroom break?
Well, we're in the start of the meeting, but we're going to take a break.
Just for a quick sec. Yeah.
Thank you. So,
5 minutes. Official stretch.
No, we do not need any more women. It all worked out fine. We have 30 seconds to spare. Thank you.
that's not the case.
That's great.
So this Niagara one, that's just that condo?
Yeah, this is the third
one. Yeah, this is the Carmel bit, isn't it? No, this whole Carmel sold it.
So, yeah, it's a new guy. His name is Mark Petter. And they have the barcode, our calls, and Sasha, those guys, they kind of do out of the
Oh, shit, they missed out quick. Oh, no, absolutely. It wasn't a question of that.
No. I'm just saying they sold out the whole thing.
Well, that's good to know that they're actually developing and flipping. So I was happy to hear that.
They went to the sales office, like next to Princeton's Deli.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have a lease for a year. They hired sales staff for a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a hugely great area, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's mostly the demographic there is mostly people in River Heights.
I think Carmen, they got their, they did market right. They knew the market. Yeah, no, and if no one dies in that back lane, I'll be wrong. I'll be completely wrong, and I'll apologize. We'll see. It's all done. Done is done. Yeah.
Okay. Public hearing starts.
You are me, councillors. Michael, I haven't met you yet. It's great to meet you. Thank you for this time to be here and to present our project. I'm the rector of St. Matthew's Anglican Church. And I want to just make three, I think, minor amendments to the administrative report that you got on the rezoning. I appreciate the speed that Michael put this together for you, and I think I brought some additional material. Thank you, one for each. There were actually 27 people at the neighborhood open house that was held a month ago. The report, I think, just says 12. We have the same number of total units that we're asking for, but on the but the that units is slightly changed from what you might have read. So that there's an additional four-bedroom, there's no bachelor, it's on your blue sheet. So, and our architect is with us tonight, Ken McKinnon from Friesen Tokar, and he will go through the design in a bit more detail. The third, just for accuracy, is all 24 of the units will be visitable, which is on the second page, but only six of them will be fully accessible,
okay,
which means, you know, all the bathrooms and the interior doors and stuff. So 24, all of them will be visible, but six of them will be fully accessible. So I'm sorry on the inaccuracy of the information that came to you. What we thought tonight was that Bob Clarkson, as the oldest member in our parish that's here, will speak a little bit to the history. Roger Gateson is here as the chairperson of St. Matthew's Nonprofit Housing Corp, and he will introduce the board of the housing corporation. Ken McKinnon will briefly cover the design that's proposed. John McNerney, who's on the board of the Housing Corp, will speak to the variance requests. Thank you. Is that okay?
Okay. Would it be easiest if we all came to the table?
Sure.
Could you actually, if you wouldn't mind, just come to the table. But yeah, if you wouldn't mind just clarifying for me, my mind's a little fuzzy from the last meeting. Exactly, you're asking us to specifically amend the report in something?
None of the changes that you've identified are
require a change.
Conditions. They're just for information.
Just for information. So they're not actually amending.
Yeah, not actually.
It doesn't change the substance of what we're asking, but if this is a public document and we're asking you to consider it, I just wanted to make sure that everything in it.
It doesn't change the conditions we're voting on and need to be amended. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. Greetings. I first attended St. Matthew's in 1949 and became a regular member in 1952. The history of St. Matthew's is one of service to the Western community, Western part of St. Matthew's. I think it's very significant that in 1912 is when our cornerstone was laid, and when the church opened in 1914, city's expectations were such at that time that they changed the name of the avenue from Lavinia to St. Matthew's Avenue. Church was not named after the avenue is named after the church. Very rare. I think the only other one in Winnipeg is the same as St. Mary's Cathedral. Church burned down in 1944, was rebuilt, reopened in 1947. At that time, when I became a member, I recall the building being full on any special occasion whatsoever, and it would seat 1,200 to 1,300 people. Now we have a congregation, normally of an average of 70 people, and it's just impossible for that small congregation to continue to manage and financially support a building of the size we have. So we had to look for alternatives. I've been treasurer of St. Matthew's for quite a few years now, and I know what that has cost and what it amounts to. We are in the lucky position at the moment, through some bequests, to have some capital funds that we can make available to help with the conversion. And that is our intent at this time. 5 years ago, we redeveloped the total basement of the church for a neighborhood resource center. That we have maintained, and we intend to maintain it. And this gives us the opportunity to ensure the future of that space as a service to the community. And that is one of our major targets. At the same time, of course, we want to retain within the building some dedicated worship space for us. That, I think, is essential for a building of this size and the history we have, that we maintain a presence to ensure that we continue to serve that West End and Windham. That is the intent, that is the hope that we can develop through this program. Thank you.
What's going to happen to those stained glass windows?
We're going to keep some of them, I'll guarantee you that.
Absolutely. So
what are you going to do the rest of them?
Well, the architect, the architect will speak to that. Roger Gateson.
Good evening. I'm chairman of the board of the St. Matthews Nonprofit Housing Corporation. I won't introduce them by name, but would the other board members stand, please? So you can recognize them. Thank you. We have a board of three members from St. Matthews, three from Greena Reach Church community, and three members at large. I'm also a member of the Greena Reach Church community, which meets in the basement of St. Matthews. We're not only renters, however, we're also partners in many activities with St. Matthews. And we've been drawn to this project for several reasons. One, the sustainability of a landmark building in this part of the community. Two, the opportunity to partner with St. Matthews in providing safe, affordable housing for families in the neighborhood. Thirdly, by keeping the building sustainable, we support the ministries that operate out of the basement, which soon will be up to, I think, about 10 hours a day. Remarkable. So the staff, and we're also really interested. We are mostly Wolseley people in Greater Wheat Church community, but we've moved north of Portage because we see an opportunity maybe to have some impact there. And the sustainability of the building and the ministries in the basement will mean that for, as Kathy says, another 100 years, St. Matthews and now Greater Wheat Church community can have an impact, a positive impact in the community. So we're really very enthusiastic and supportive of this. Thank you.
Okay, Ken? I am Ken. Bruce McCullough of Kids in the Hall that said, every time I walk into a church, I think this would make a great house. In this case, we're making great housing, I think, because we're going to try to preserve the integrity of the exterior shell, have the building itself remain intact, but fill it with housing around the perimeter. So we're on the main floor, we're going to have a combination of housing around the perimeter, the St. Matthews worship space, which will have worship space for 100 people, and an interior courtyard. Now, all of the units above that would surround this courtyard, which, as the levels go higher and higher, would have a series of walkways. Now, the interesting thing about as you go higher and higher in this courtyard is the very ornate roof that's in this building. It's a wood, very well carved out, Gothic style wood arch. Structure. And within this space itself, we're going to create these catwalks that let you still experience the aspects of the church as it remained before. Around the perimeter, now we are going to maintain the stained glass windows that are in the worship space, or put some new windows that are currently in there in those spaces, but we're also going to try to maintain some of the stained glass by backlighting it within the space itself. Within the perimeter, we're going to have to use those windows for actual natural light. Goal for St. Matthews is to try to raise some money for this project by selling off some of these windows, to answer your question partly. But the interior courtyard itself, the idea, you can see this sort of shows what the roof structure itself is to create an interior courtyard that becomes an exterior for the building, within the building, so that this becomes a community gathering space for all the residents in the building. It becomes their playground, their meeting space, plaza space, lounge space, certain areas too, but overall, basically a well-lit interior courtyard that becomes the heart of the building that can be used by both worship space and residents in the end. So that's the goal of this project from the design perspective.
Thank you. Any questions?
Super cool. That's all I can say.
Yes, some questions on the
exterior, I guess. You mentioned that you've been trying. You are leaving the exterior as is,
except for the windows.
The windows. Are we building bigger? Are we putting something on top of this?
We're trying to provide just windows at the locations where there are windows right now.
You're not looking at decks off the back.
No.
Picking up the neighbors.
The building is built right to the property line right now.
Yeah.
And the windows themselves are just going to be.
That's it.
Operable windows. Ventilation and views.
So the exterior of the building, besides changing some windows, generally remains the same.
Right.
The roof as well remains the same roof line, I guess.
Same roof line. We may introduce some clerestory, like higher level windows between the roof spaces.
Brings more light in. That common space.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and I wanted to address the specific four applications that we have in front of you, the rezoning and the three variances. And I don't have much to say because your planner has an excellent report that covers all the issues very well. First of all, in terms of the rezoning, we need this number of units to make the project, this density to make the project viable. And Michael's report covered that very well. The three variances are in terms of lot area. We don't have the 20,000 square feet required. This is the building we have. This is what we have to work with, and it's trying to make this project fit into an existing situation. And that's the same with the third variance, which is to maintain the arts. The building was built in that style when churches were built wall to wall. There was no extra space around it. So this is the building we have to work with, and I appreciate the support we had from the planner for these variances. The final one is the variance on parking, and it's requesting a variance from 23 spaces to zero. It's a pretty extreme variance. The planner, Michael, asked us to give him something to work with. to justify this extreme variance, and we did search. The search was very interesting, and I guess what it told me is that every city is struggling with parking. Our attitudes to parking have changed from that last half of the 20th century when every parking was a right. Everybody had to have parking. We had to provide for the parking. And now in most cities, it's shifting somewhat. And it's certainly shifting when it comes to issues of social housing. So I found all over the place relief from parking requirements for social housing. In many cities, zones that have much reduced parking. As a matter of fact, the city of Winnipeg is dealing with the same issue of trying to come to grips with current parking. In the downtown zoning bylaw, there's no parking requirement. The market will decide how parking is provided to meet the needs of those buildings. So I wasn't able to find some precedent in terms of social housing or in terms of another city that would say zero parking is okay. We did try to address the issues on parking. Did you handle those copies, those reports? Those five copies?
Yes, I think it's in one of the.
So you should have part of the package that we gave you should be something that talks about parking management issues.
Yes.
Okay. And so I guess this is just trying to look at all of the parking problems you have in an infill area like this, and trying to convert existing development and how we might address it. So starting on page three, I've listed transportation options, and I think they're pretty obvious ones. First, this map shows the transit routes. This is at the center of the transit system. If any place in the city has good bus connections, this is going to be it. Second is bike routes, and I understand you've been tuned this evening to a discussion on bikes already. That bikes, especially in inner city areas, are becoming a reasonable alternative to a vehicle. The third one is on-street parking, and at the end of this report, all of the streets around this development have some restrictions, either during the weekdays or during rush hours. But there is on-street parking, and in dense urban areas, that often becomes the practice of shuffling parking around the street system. The fourth one is private parking agreements. And when you drive around this neighborhood, it's a really solid neighborhood of single-family houses and duplexes with yards and backyards and lanes and parking. And so we think there's a lot of potential here for private arrangements to be made between any tenants in the building and someone in the neighborhood who wants to make $30-40 a month from renting parking. A fifth option is car share. In some cities it's getting pretty well established for several people in the community would share a car. In Winnipeg, I think it's being explored in Osborne Village and in Riverview and some other neighborhoods I know of. It still has a long way to grow, but it's a potential to reduce that impact of parking in a neighborhood. And the last one I've listed is parking on adjacent development. We've been talking to two adjacent developments. One is Langtree Industries, which is right across McGee, that has a parking lot and may have the potential to expand that parking lot. Of course, that does require the expense of an agreement with Langtree, a rezoning, a redevelopment of that parking lot. And on the other side of the project, across St. Mary, the Lions Manor, which has acquired a lot of land to the north and is now in the process of developing plans for expanding into that area and additional parking. And again, we're talking to them about possibly sharing parking, but they're a long way from being able to make an agreement with us. So these are options, but as the planner's report said, they're not conclusive, and I got to admit that his recommendation of 6 parking spaces was pretty generous under the circumstances, but I'm going to ask for more. I was going to start by saying in this neighborhood, I don't think that parking is that much of an issue, although, again, from the first part of your meeting, maybe I've got that wrong. But it's not like Centennial West Alexander, where we've had a big user like Health Sciences Center really have an impact on the residential fabric of the neighborhood, where it's being eaten away by the moss of surface parking. We don't have that. In this neighborhood, it's rows of pretty solid single-family houses and families trying to make a go in this neighborhood. So I think it could fit into this neighborhood. Second is, I think it's a fairly unique development. I don't know if you're going to find another development in the area where you have a similar building with no options for parking being redeveloped to this size. So I'm going to suggest that it may not be that bad a precedent to go to approve the zero parking. And finally, we think that the lack of parking will principally impact the tenants of this building, and that the possible negative impacts from that lack of parking are more than offset by the fact that the community gets to keep this building, the congregation gets to keep a worship space and keep living here, the community gets 24 low-income rental units, and all of the community services that exist in the basement, in the lower level of this development, and are so important to it, continue to exist. Having said all that, again, I appreciate the planner's recommendation, and we want to make this project work. We'll, of course, follow your recommendation. The last point I want to make came out of just a reading of the report, and a standard clause about a 10% dedication on the increase in value. We were talking about this just before we came here and are really uncertain what that means financially and what it means in
project. But we did want to point out that we're taking a non-tax-paying church and adding 24 residential units, which will be paying taxes. Hoping that there may be a way of waiving that that 10% dedication. I'm done. Thank you.
A couple of the administration, but I don't know when you want us to do that.
If I could ask the park, just to follow up on the parking. I'm uncomfortable. Zero. I am uncomfortable. I have to deal with this in my own ward a few times. I think the other one, I'd be very much more comfortable if we had some private agreement arrangements already in place or theoretically in place and a car share program already kind of attached to this. The act for transportation and transit is absolutely right. This does make sense in our TOD design scope. So this is right. But how do you, I know you say it's a little time away, but I think also we can fairly say that the completion of this building is a little time away as well. Regarding those two businesses, Lions Manor and Laundry, can you kind of give me an idea of, it seems to be, if your renters want to have a parking spot, they can pay for it and use one of these two spots potentially in the future or private. Can you tell me kind of how those conversations have gone, where you're at, really where you're at with both? They said, no, go away. We like the idea, kind of, but we're not sure yet. Where are you at with those two conversations?
Kathy, you've had most of those conversations, I think.
Well, and let me just take one step backwards because Roger Gateson with a group of people are also involved in smaller housing situations in our neighborhood, and one of them have already offered this project two parking spaces. Great. So is that a real possibility within walking distance of the building? Yes. That's one arrangement that's already been offered.
Okay.
One. Two, the challenge with Lions is one of the people that support this project, and we've been in conversation with them from the very beginning. They are thinking about a much more substantial project in that area that Ken showed you. But they currently have parking that they rent.
Okay.
So, yes, they have parking. Yes, they rent it. But yes, it's going to change. Sometime in the next 5 years. So,
yeah.
It's not a. And at least in my mind, because we're targeting families, we would have to deal with Maryland. Right. So it's across Maryland.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No,
however many that is, three lanes. Then Langtree, do you want me to?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I just want to tell you that we approved of this community committee a project on Arlington Street without any parking whatsoever. So there is,
there is a precedent.
There is a precedent. And it was done because there's good transit routes. One thing about fortunate with the inner city is we have good transit. It really does help. So I don't think there's going to be a problem with parking.
The Langtree challenge, which at some level might be the most obvious, because it's right across McGee,
yeah,
is zoned residential. So I think two lots just south of the warehouse, both of them are zoned residential. And to take lots out of a neighborhood that could be houses, they're not functioning, they're not developed. So it's a longer conversation with our neighborhood. Nobody really wants asphalt in their neighborhood. So, we've had a conversation. The owner of Langtree is open to a proposal, but I'm conscious also of the wider needs of the neighborhood. That's why we're doing what we're doing.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, if I just may add something. The way that the condition is worded on the parking is that they would have to have shared parking agreements in order prior to final occupancy. So that would give them some time actually make those arrangements. And basically then they would have to provide evidence of agreements, like lease agreements, to the department to satisfy that condition. And I mean, if at some point in the future it turned out that the parking was not necessary, they could always come back to ask to have the condition amended. But we found that asking for shared parking agreements part of final occupancy allows for those negotiations to take place if the parking's ready by the time the building's open.
And it's only six spots you're asking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No, that answers my question.
The opposition, you'll have a chance to come and read that. But you have to stick. You have to stick to the. You can't introduce anything new.
Thank you.
Well, we have other people. I'm just assuming that they didn't want to speak, but I think Paul would not. Stuart Fletcher here.
No, he left.
Patricia Stewart. Gail Schnabel.
That's me.
You want to speak?
Only to say that I'm a member of the St. Matthew's Congregation and on the board, and also have been very involved in the community ministry program that runs out at the lower level, and I am here in support of that.
Okay. Clara Schweitzer. Is it Tony? Clara Schweitzer? You want to speak?
No.
Okay. Ian Ferguson?
Yes.
You want to speak? You don't have to.
I'm in support.
I don't want you to.
You straight up on it.
I don't want the meeting to progress as fast as you can. But speak if you really have something to add. You won't be able to speak tonight if you don't speak. You don't want to speak?
No, sir. Thank you.
Christine Creekeeper.
Hi, I'm in support.
Robert Dewick.
I'm here, I'm in support.
Margaret Abbott.
Yes, I'm in support. I'm a member of St. Matthew's, and I live in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And I'm just really...
But you don't want to speak.
No, I don't want to say I'm very much supportive because we need housing.
Lloyd Penner?
He had elected me.
He left. Dennis McNabb?
I support.
Stephen Murphy?
Support.
Lyle Barkman?
I'm in support.
I'm also a member of St. Matthew's Anglican Church, and I live on Agnes Street, which is a stone throw away from the church. And mostly I'm here to say I think it's a tragedy beyond words that we would even consider destroying this cathedral. It has very magnificent stained glass windows. I think there's five on one side and four on another. And the ceiling... The nave, everything about the church is very beautiful. We don't have that many cathedrals left in Winnipeg. St. Boniface burned. Sepulchre was torn down. Young United was burnt. So this is a precious treasure that should be kept as a historical building in Winnipeg. And I think that the Lions Club is going to be probably doing geothermal energy. for their 80-unit apartment building. And it is in discussion to send the geothermal heating over to St. Matthew's Anglican Church. And possibly if the heating costs were pulled down, the church could survive. So that was our main point. The second point was the parking, and we have trouble with parking on McGee and Agnes. And the West Central Women's Resource Center is moving into McGee and Ellis, and it's all white upper class women who will be driving into our community and working there, so that will be increased parking. There's not only parking for the 24 apartments, there's parking for St. Matthew's Maryland Community Ministry in the basement, West Central Community Program in the basement. All the other programs in the basement also need parking. And it's already crowded, and it's already a problem. I noticed that you compared it to Greenheart, but Greenheart already has 10 parking spots, so I don't see how you can compare it to Greenheart when they have 10 parking spots already. I just wanted to find the document. Criteria for approval B does not create a substantial adverse effect on the amenities, use, safety, and convenience of the adjoining property. I think it does create a substantial adverse effect on the amenities, use, and safety, and convenience of the adjoining property. And, we're a very stressed area. Holly's house has the front window smashed. There was a double stabbing there a couple of weeks ago. Major trouble with graffiti. At 400 McGee Street, the windows in a trailer were smashed a couple of weeks ago. The van across the back lane was smashed. The cars next door to me was smashed. All the windows in my cars have been, I've lost two cars that have been smashed and tires slashed. My back door, the aluminum door was smashed. The house next door to me, the aluminum door was smashed. It goes on and on. So to add a higher density in this area is troubling. I guess that, they say that they're contributing to the community, but I sometimes have a difficult time believing that. That they're just, they come in and they work 9 to 4. They do their little shtick and then they pick up their paychecks and leave. I guess just to say that it's a stressed community and that I don't believe that this will really benefit the community. Thank you.
Okay,
questions?
Okay.
No questions.
No questions.
What I object to is the parking. They say that you can add more spots to your parking. I live on McGee Street. I live a block away from the church. My street from 8 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock at night is a 2-hour parking. And for the people that want to pay for parking in a private domain, you ain't going to make it for $40 a month. There's a gentleman beside me that lives in the house. He wants $100 a week, $100 a month, pardon me, for parking, summertime and winter. Now, how are you going to put 24 people, 24 units in a house, an apartment block, and have no parking for them? I don't see how you can do it.
You would have residential parking passes when people
move. Yeah, you
or
do.
Or the two-hour parking, just so that the two-hour parking restrictions don't apply.
Yeah, you can get residential parking. But right now, Hertz College is on Portage Avenue, and their students are the ones that are looking for parking on McGee all the way down to Ellis if they have to. Because those tickets are pretty big. You leave over 2 hours and you're guaranteed you're going to get a ticket.
Thank you.
And I object to losing those windows.
The park that's available on the street. We live about four or five houses down from the church on Maryland, and she's actually sort of stolen my thunder talking about the college that's in the end of the street, Hersing Baseball. I really, like my little bit of back alley between Portage and St. Matthews, I mean, there really is no parking available in terms of somebody renting a parking stall back there. I can only speak for that little section. But as I walk around the neighborhood during the day, or as I make one around the neighborhood during the day, I really think if you think you're getting any surface parking that's on the streets there, you might want to have another look around, because there's just not a lot of parking stalls available there. I just can't see it. I mean, if you get Lion Tree to give you a parking lot or lines across the way, you know, more power to you, fantastic. But I wouldn't count on sort of on street parking for anybody. I just don't think it's going to happen. Even on Maryland. I just don't see a lot there. Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you. Jay Stepier?
Thank you. Parking is a big issue, obviously. On Sugar Street, there's an old fire hall. Is there any chance of getting in your
sir, you're supposed to be addressing us. Could you sit down and say your remarks?
Certainly. I don't know if there's the other gentleman sitting down and addressing you personally.
Okay. Go ahead.
Is there any chance that they can obtain parking on the lot where the old fire hall is going to be? I don't know why I'm addressing the question to you when I should be addressing the question to her.
They hear you. They come up after you, and they will answer you. Okay? So you're addressing us.
The second question I have, I might have missed it someplace. I didn't hear whether this is single residence or family residence they're building, and what income range are they looking at? Are they going to be accepting income assistance recipients, which has a rental range of about $350 a month? With a person like that at $350 a month, the chance of them having a vehicle is quite slim. So I think that would minimize a lot of the parking problem, depending on what type of renters they have. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Now the applicants come forward.
We all come back.
Couple of you would be good enough.
Shall I? Let me just address the last gentleman's remarks first. When we were talking, and have already identified Lyons as a potential place for off-street parking. So because of where they are in their development thinking, we just haven't nailed that down. And so I appreciate the planner's approach. So if indeed you require us to create 6 parking units, you've given us a window to move on that and to come up with some decent plans to address that issue. And in response to the last gentleman's question, each of the units in the housing will be supported by Manitoba Housing and Renewal Corporation funding, so each of them fall under, as the rules have been told to me, you have to have a household income of less than $50,000 to qualify for those units for the space of 15 years. When we were initially trying to create a business plan that worked, the province was not open to the conversation about subsidies. The reason why this project can now conceivably go forward, depending on the discussions tonight, is that the government has offered 16 of those units, so 16 of 24, to be rent geared to income. So even though the project is targeted to families, we have 3 and 4 bedroom apartments as well as 2s and 1s, and it's Manitoba will fall underneath the guidelines of Manitoba Housing. 16 of the units will be rent geared to income. As a result, they're likely to be those families that don't have enough money to actually support the running of a car. 4 of the units will be for WRHA mental health housing program clients. So as I understand it, those clients have portable housing benefits. So in the end, 20 of the 24 units are rentable to people who will have subsidies on their income. So it is affordable, safe housing for families. And my hope to address Lynn Somerville's concerns with this project is, yes, it is a desperately needy neighborhood. You know, yes, there is a huge amount of violence. I can point to the areas outside the window where indeed that happens. But one of the ways, of many ways, to make a neighborhood more safe is to have quality, safe housing for families. So indeed, you don't have people just driving in and leaving. You have people who have a stake in that community. And so her main point about the tragedy of losing a beautiful building, right? So that tragedy is heartfelt, not just by Lynn, but by many people that have loved and invested and prayed and got married and buried their family members in that place. That place is not just physically beautiful, it's beloved. Having said that, and knowing in my own heart the heartache of a group of people willing to let go of something that they truly love, and appreciating the tragedy that's involved in that, at the turn of this century, 2001, 2002, 2003, the water was coming in 4 corners of the building almost every day. The unhealthy mold levels, I don't know the proper scientific words, were measurable in our building. We had that vermiculite kind of asbestos-laden stuff in the roof. It was an unhealthy building, and we were on the verge of having to lose the whole thing, like lose the whole thing from the neighborhood and all the work that's done out of it. This is our best plan that's feasible to turn this into a resource that will be in our neighborhood for the next 100 years. If the congregation, our beloved group of people, can't sustain it for all of those 100, the building itself has enough integrity now to, if this project goes forward, to be sustainable even without the congregation. The reason why we are going to give, in essence, away our building, lease our building for 50 years to St. Matthew's Nonprofit Housing Corporation is, but we're not giving it away. We want to be long-term tenants in that building. This frees us up to be the parish that, in my worldview, I would say God is calling us to be, right? And this is a way. So, yes, there is great loss involved, and nobody feels it more than the parishioners. But this is a plan for the future.
I'll just speak briefly to the historic preservation side of things. This isn't a designated historic building, but the goal of this project is to preserve as much of the exterior and the interior as possible. Many of the suites will have the finishes that are in this interior church space as part of their suite. We're going to have coffered ceilings on the second level that are part of that side portion of the church. We're going to have decorated archways within many of the spaces. One of the key strategies to historic preservation is adaptive reuse. In our lifetime, we're going to see many churches on the decline and many churches that cannot sustain themselves into the future. And adaptive reuse is a way to preserve something that has remained in the neighborhood for 100 years into the next 100 years, but not taking away significantly from the building itself, but just providing another experience for the building. It was also mentioned that geothermal could make this project viable into the future. And geothermal is something that's got an incredibly high capital cost, very low payback, and something like that is not salvation for a building like this, whose dramatic envelope repairs alone are going to cost a substantial amount in this renovation. So there's no quick fix to keep this building in place as is. Adaptive reuse is the best strategy.
I just think, if I may, just think about a closing comment.
A few words.
As much as we're going to preserve many of the attractive parts of the building in the new housing development, this isn't just about survival of the building. It's about impact on the community. And St. Matthew's Church and my church, Green Wheat Church community, are involved in this not because we want to preserve bricks and mortar, though that's a piece of it, but because we want to make a contribution to the community. And so the families that are going to live in this development will be well supported, we hope. Our commitment to support them so that this is a safe community, and I think that will spill out into the surrounding area, at least for Holy Cross. So, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one question. Just a quick question. What you're attempting to do here is quite visionary and quite huge. And I'm not a developer. I'm just thinking, though, with some things you've said and how the envelope needs such repair and all this investment. And then on the other side, you're going to have low return on your units. You're going to be selling $350, $400 a month kind of. Who has done your business plan that shows that you'll have the financing to do this huge, it's a huge capital project that you're going to have to do?
Well, we've done it with a lot of advice, and the province, the Manitoba Housing and Renewal Corp folks, Winnipeg Housing and Homelessness Initiative, WHHI crew, they go through it, and then they go through it again, and then they go through it again. The trick is twofold. One, we're not trying to make a profit.
Yes.
So private developers that we talked to originally, you know, they just laughed. Right? You can't do. That's the reason why Winnipeg has this problem. You can't do this with a private development mindset. You do this because you want to invest in a community. That's why you do it. had some other point around. Oh, and Assiniboine Credit Union. We have not signed all the mortgage papers yet, but they've given us the letter of commitment, and without a lending institution that has a commitment to a community, not just to their bottom line, we couldn't do this. So it's really twofold that, does it hang? It hangs to be honest with the feasibility. It hangs because of the subsidies.
Should also mention that we've had a quantity surveyor do a substantial Class B cost estimate, and we're working with the same construction manager that did NEC and the West End Cultural Center.
You know who's innovative and creative. So is it still a, you know, do we still have to work hard? Absolutely. And it was because of all the private foundations in town, you know, if you add them up, well, not quite all of them, but, you know, Winnipeg Foundation, Thomas Sill, Neighborhoods, that whole crew, and the federal government with the Skippy Grant, that's how we got the new roof and the basement. So I think if they hadn't come to the plate in 04, we would not be sitting in front of you today. We'd have had to close. So we're here based on a huge investment by all sorts of people.
That's my question. Thank you.
Councillor Smith, do you want me to move a motion on it? Okay. I would move that the report of the Winnipeg Public Service be taken as read. I move that the receipt of public representations be concluded. I move that the criteria A to D of the subsection of the City of Winnipeg Charter as set out below are satisfied. I move that the recommendation of the public service be concurred in. And I move that the public hearing with respect to this application be concluded. Oh, you know what? I just read the variance first. Is that okay? I can go back and do the other one.
Yeah.
I just had it open to the wrong section. That's why it didn't sound quite like it usually does for rezoning. So that's for the variances. Madam Clerk, do you want to read out the little thing? And I'll do the other one.
You would like me to read out?
Well, there's a thing about the end of the public hearing that you want the clerk usually reads out. Do you have that? It says that, that it's whether it's appealable or not and all that.
The chairperson would normally read it, but I can't.
Okay.
I can simply read it.
Sometimes the clerk reads it. Josie always reads it.
Sure.
Thank you.